Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard from FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting, along with Trevor Sycamo of PewterReport.com, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is especially timely today, Trevor, because not only are we back after a mini hiatus, we're back in style kicking off a 2015 NFL Draft redraft of the first round, beginning with your Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes.
They took Jameis.
So for people who might be just tuning in, last week we did the 2014 draft.
Yes.
And we went back, picks 1 through 32. We went over who was selected, kind of how it's gone, whether we would have selected those guys again, if there was somebody better on the board. I think there were only – how many did we have that were repeats? Only three, right? Was it?
Like in the exact spots?
Yeah.
Because we had Aaron Donald stoned up on the Rams, but at 2 instead of 13. And then,
I think it was only like 3.
Jake Matthews, right? Kyle Fuller. I think that was it.
If you haven't listened to those, go back and listen to those. Those are some fun podcasts. But This week, we are on to 2015.
Oh, and CJ Mosley. You were right. 3.
3. There we go. Memory. So I knew I was right. You just had to come around to it.
Right. So that's usually how it works.
So this week we're going over the 2015 class, and this was the Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota class, and this is something that I paid heavy attention to just because I'm from down here. I'm from down in Tampa. The Bucs have not had a franchise quarterback before this point in like 40 years.
Who was the last one? I mean, because Dilfer was there a while, but that doesn't really count.
Doug Williams, I guess.
Oh my. How long did he play in Tampa?
Not like franchise quarterback long.
Right.
You know? And so this is also a franchise that has had Steve Young on the roster, but they traded him for Vinny Testaverde. Good pick. Good choice, guys.
Yeah.
They also had Bo Jackson. They picked Bo Jackson after Bo Jackson said, "I won't play for you."
Oh, my.
You know?
Oh, my.
So
good bold choice.
It's been an interesting history for the Buccaneers. And so this pick, to start the 2015 draft, like truly had like the weight of their history on its shoulders. Mm-hmm. Like this was honestly, I know in retrospect, you could talk about Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks' draft class and all that and making the Super Bowl defense and everything. But like this draft was probably the most important draft pick that the Buccaneers were going to have just because of everything the franchise had been through, void of a quarterback. And there was no debate. The two top players in the draft were quarterbacks. So it's not like the year before where Jadeveon Clowney was the possible guy at number one. Like, this was going to be a quarterback, and it was going to go to a team that had been so unlucky and so void of a good quarterback in a long time. And so it ended up being Jameis Winston, and if I had to go do it all over again, I would still give them Jameis Winston.
You would? Okay. Yes. I was curious about that. There's a lot of conversation about here Mariota, and I feel like there was leading up to the draft, and it's weird because we still can't answer it, right? Like, I mean, clearly, in my opinion, it was definitely Mariota until this past season. And Mariota, his offense is terrible. And you could say a lot of the same things about Winston's. Neither have been given great coaching or scheme around them during their careers. The caliber of players gone up for both guys during their time. But I think we're still kind of waiting to see best football from Mariota and Winston. And good quarterbacks, but are they great? Are they worth those first two picks?
Yeah, no question about that. I think that Mariota's sophomore year, I loved him. He was my QB1. And then as the junior years came into play, we got to see Winston a little bit more. He struggled a little bit. I think Mariota didn't have as good of a year. But, you know, obviously everything that happened with Winston early on in his career, I thought that Mariota was the better passer then. But Winston obviously had that, you know, that it factor that people talk about. Jameis Winston was the right pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Also because of like who he is as the leader of the franchise, as the face of the franchise, being a Florida State guy. I just think like cultural fit, Jameis Winston, being that vocal person, being that person to kind of there's no shyness to who he is or what he's about. Jameis Winston took control of that from week one, from the moment that he was drafted. And yes, he's had a lot of his struggles, but even given everything that's been, I think that you hit on it a little bit there. Both these guys to play their best football. And here we are going into both of their fourth years. Winston's been banged up a little bit. Mariota's the same way. I think because who are Mariota's weapons right now. I know Derrick Henry's obviously taking over as a running back, and I love that.
Yeah, Corey Davis and Taewon Taylor, guys they drafted in the first and third rounds last year, are going to be big steps. Rashard Matthews has honestly played great in Tennessee. He's been really, really good. Delanie Walker's had an unbelievable career there and is still one of the better tight ends in the league. So he's still got some good talent around him. You know, and this is probably going to be the best chance he's going to have to put all that together, because even when they had good receivers in the past, which has really only been last year and this year, the offense didn't really allow them to maximize those guys. Davis was hurt some, and, you know, they used heavy personnel looks so much and tried to, you know, ground and pound the ball so much. It was kind of the opposite of what Mariota's offense in college did in terms of being able to let him spread the field and attack. And I think Matt LaFleur, their new OC, is going to let him kind of thrive in the way that he could. So, you know, if I look back at these two picks, my personal opinion, I had Winston over Mariota going into the draft. I think just slightly. I think they were like literally like 12 and 13 on my something. They were like right next to each other on my board. But I think I would still see it pretty much the same way, except I do think Mariota's been a little bit better at this point in his career, but I still think Winston has the higher ceiling. And so I still think they're both so relatively young, I still might take that higher ceiling. I mean, you know, if you're ranking them where they've been so far in their career, I'd have Mariota higher. But if you're looking for a franchise guy and they all get new slates and new coaching staffs and things like that, I still think Winston has such great promise if he can ever put it all together.
Mm-hmm. He's just got to, you know, but we've been talking about this since he had his national championship year. Mm-hmm. Like, just the mistakes got to stop.
Right.
And he's always, but I mean, not stop. I think stop's the wrong word. He's a high variance guy. He's going to throw picks. He's going to turn the ball over. That's fine. Sure. I mean, well, it's not fine, but I mean, like, that's who he is. And you have to accept that. But you also have to think that he's the guy who can shine brighter in the biggest moments. And I kind of still think that is of Winston. And last year, those last three games of 2017 where his shoulder was actually healthy, I thought he played some of his best football that he's played in the NFL. So that encourages me enough to say that, you know, 3 years in with the injuries to both guys, knowing that there's still better football to be played, he would still be my number one pick.
Yeah, and I'm still going to go with Mariota to Tennessee and number two overall. But looking back on these picks, just grading the performances so far, I mean, I think even if you look back, these were the right two picks for these franchises in terms of taking quarterbacks at this right. point in the draft. They both needed them. You mentioned Tampa Bay have needed one for ages, and clearly looking at their depth chart, they needed one. The Titans had Zach Mettenberger, who isn't even in the league anymore, as their QB1. Charlie Whitehurst, Clipboard Jesus, was QB2, and Alex Taney was QB3. This was a team.
Clipboard Jesus.
He's one of my favorite. He's one of my all-time favorites, man. Just absolutely trash when he got in games, but he just looked so majestic on the
sideline.
There
is such an art to making a career as a backup quarterback.
Oh, yes.
You know? And not like, and I'm not talking about just like being a backup quarterback. I'm talking about like making sure you don't become a starting quarterback either.
Oh,
you
my
know,
gosh, yeah.
Just being the guy that's on the sideline, holding the clipboard, cashing the checks, not taking the hits,
consistently making a couple million to do the bare
Bro,
minimum.
That's
I mean,
dream, man.
It is. Yeah. I mean, look at
the dream.
You have to. I think every single guy that makes a career out of being a backup quarterback should go on to run for office. Because if you make a career 100%. Out of being a backup quarterback, you hoodwink teams over and over and over and over again.
Hoodwink.
Because let's be honest, you suck at playing quarterback, but you're awesome on the whiteboard. You're an awesome person. Your teammates love you. Your coaches love you. You work hard. You're relatable. You know, you can probably even say a couple wise things in the locker room, a couple leadership-like things. It can be real cookie cutter, real corny, doesn't matter. You're the third string quarterback. Nobody's counting on you to be original anyway. That's what you make a career out of. Go on, do it as a politician. It's the same thing. You don't actually have to be good. You just have to convince people that you're worth keeping around. And that's really what these guys do. And more power to them, man. That's absolutely the life right there. Clipboard Jesus did it for, I don't even know. He was like 30-something when he retired. He was in the league for
like
12 years.
I feel like Landry Jones, too.
Landry's another one. Terrific person, terrific teammate. Coaches love him. And the other thing, he improved just enough during the time since he came in to where he is now. You can't throw a ton of picks. He's gotten away from that. Doesn't throw as many picks anymore. really understands the game, cerebral. You know, no great traits, no great performances, really, just steady and okay. Probably better than Charlie Whitehurst, if we're being fair. But yeah, there's a lot of guys like that. So Titans keep Mariota. If you look back on these two picks, I think it's fair to say both have been B's so far, but still have the potential to move to A's. Is that fair? Do you think that's fair to say that you would grade them as B's just because of the performances, not because they were the wrong picks?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess. But,
both can move to A's. Both of these guys need new coaches. Mariota got one. Winston didn't yet.
Still waiting.
Better talent around him this year. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm both how both play this year. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If Winston struggles this year and plays, you know, like he did last year, and the Bucs end up with a top 5-10 pick, you think quarterback's on their radar?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay. I know they picked up the 5th-year option for
but they're going to clean house in that coaching staff.
Correct, yeah. But you think Winston would have to be truly dreadful for them to consider drafting a quarterback?
I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback anyways. Mm.
So he can suck and still.
Okay. I do not see any way they're moving on from Jameis Winston.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of promise there, and it's hard to find that in today's NFL. All right, enough time on the quarterbacks. Jacksonville picking.
I'm switching it up here.
Oh, yeah, because they went Dante Fowler, right?
Yeah. Who do you think I'm going with?
So
who do you think I'm going
with? Is it an edge defender?
It's not.
It's not an edge defender. Oh, okay, no. Okay. Hang on. Oh, my gosh, I know what you're going to do. You're giving him Marcus Peters, aren't you?
I'm giving him Marcus Peters.
I knew you were. Because you're going to team him, and then we're going to go back, and when we do the redraft for, what, 2016, you're going to give him Jalen.
Oh, buddy, am I ever.
You're about to give them the chirpiest corners in the league.
I mean, you know, having a lockdown corner, you know, we talk about obviously the quarterbacks and the trench players, very important. But if you want to build that championship defense, you've got to play aggressive. And yes, playing in the trenches obviously has something to do with that. And Jacksonville had some work to do in their defensive line, certainly relative to what they have now. But you've got to be able to have a lockdown quarterback. And my goodness, it's hard to argue that there has been a better one than Marcus Peters since he came into the league. I think he leads the league in turnover since he came in. Yeah. He's just an absolute ball hawk. Knows how to run his mouth. Knows how to get in receivers' heads. Knows how to make plays on the ball no matter where it is. Knows how to take it and make the most out of it, sometimes returning these for points, setting up offenses. When you have a lockdown cornerback like that, and Jalen Ramsey's the same way, those are momentum guys. Guys that can truly change the game on a 3rd and 8, knock the ball away from a team's top receiver, come up with a turnover late in the game, something like that. Marcus Peters truly is like a momentum-changing player, and yep. I think that he absolutely deserved to be a top 5 pick in this draft.
I mean, remember, who was it, Derrick Henry, that almost fumbled at the end of the Chiefs game? Wasn't that him that forced the fumble? Wasn't that Peters?
Was it? I mean, dude just got a knack for making plays on the ball. He does. You can't. It's so hard to teach stuff like that.
And then he
teach guys to be more to even like search for turnovers, but some guys it's just natural.
And he had like what 4 forced fumbles anyway in the regular season. I mean, you're right. I do agree that it's hard to like people like scouting wise. Like how can you say it just has a knack for it? I don't know, but like some guys do. Like
Kansas City got Marcus Peters at 19.
I know, behind Trey Waynes. And Kevin Johnson. I
mean, granted, there were not good reviews from Marcus Peters coming out of Washington.
And like, there's still concerns.
Obviously, the Chiefs bailed on him. So there are still concerns that he had. But look, man, I'm just saying, no doubt about it, a top 5 talent in this draft, in a good draft.
I'm looking through, and yeah, I think I agree with you. It's a good player. So now, by the way, just as a little refresher, the Bucks ended up in your redraft. Now they would have Jameis and OBJ from the last redraft we did. You know. The Titans would have Morgan Moses because Taylor Lewan was already off the board, and Mariota. And the Jaguars would have, who did we give them in the last redraft? Were they even in the? Oh yeah, we did. They're up at the top. They would have Jimmy Garoppolo and Marcus Peters.
Oakland, much better.
Yeah. Oakland.
Just hire us 4 years later and we'll go back in time.
Yes.
We'll fix your team.
Can't argue with that. Jaguars actually took Dante Fowler. I think it's fair to give that a C, right? Missed the first year, was average, was good.
Right. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Big year coming up for him. Amari Cooper for the Raiders.
That was my favorite reaction.
Doesn't that pretty much sum up what you feel about Amari Cooper right now? I don't know. Like, Cooper's good, but like,
Cooper's good in theory.
Yeah, I would never spend the fourth overall pick on Cooper
ever
in a redraft. So I mean, the way he was last year, I mean, he was probably a D. I don't know. I think it's fair to give him a B, I guess, because he's had some productive moments there. But I don't know. B or C? What do you think?
Amari?
Yeah.
I would say a C, right?
I think so. He was rough last year. I got to see him bounce back.
What is it? Doesn't he like lead the league in drops since he came in the league?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, no question. It's also made a lot of plays, but not a lot of plays.
No, I know. That's fine. But like. I feel like the same people that would criticize Jameis like might not criticize Amari Cooper. You know, and it's like
people love to vouch for Amari Cooper. You know why? Because Amari Cooper coming out was everybody loved him. There, he can't miss.
He's great. I think he's incredible. He's his footwork and his route running and how precise he can be.
Good player.
Yeah,
not a game changing player.
Catch the ball. Yeah. He's got to catch football.
Yeah, and he doesn't do a lot in the red zone either. And I think that there's times where he gets erased from games and. I don't know if it's a competitive streak or what it is, but I think he gets erased a lot of the time by physical corners. Raiders have a lot of needs. Defensive end is a screaming need. I mean, Justin Tuck, who was, I think, going to retire right after this or pretty soon after this, Danico Autry, Benson Mayawa, and C.J. Wilson. Those are their DNs, dude. Now, they just drafted Khalil Mack. I don't know why he's not listed. He's listed with the linebackers on this list, even though they're at a 4-3 here. Khalil Mack, so obviously Mack would be one of them. So looking for a player outside of Mack, you know, another edge opposite Mack, that's super intriguing to me. I get why they drafted Amari Cooper or wideout because their wide receivers are, no joke, James Jones, old James Jones, Rod Streeter, Andre Holmes, and Kembrell Tompkins.
Yikes.
So this is like the worst receiving core I ever seen. Running back was horrible, too. Latavius Murray and Trent Richardson. I mean, Murray's okay, I guess, but good old Trent Rich was here. So this was a rough group. And now we have Todd Gurley's on the board in this situation. Danielle Hunter's on the board. Vic Beasley. There's a lot of good edge players. It wasn't quite the ones we envisioned being good, but so they've got some options here. You know, after quarterback, I really think pass rusher is the position of need for these teams that I think really needs to be addressed. So I'm going to give him Danielle Hunter. I think in a redraft, you know, Danielle Hunter has all the traits that teams want.
And his production, over Vic Beasley.
Oh, Hunter's better than Vic Beasley. There's
no
doubt in my mind. I think Hunter's clearly the best edge defender.
Dude, so I remember when Hunter was coming out when he was still at LSU, I thought it was really intriguing. Didn't really know what to make of him. Kind of was all over the place with how I graded edge players, so I wasn't really sure. Like, there were flashes with Hunter, but I never knew what to do with him. But I do remember kind of looking stuff up. I like to look stuff up about prospects, like in interviews or what coaches say about him or things like that. And there was this one interview that I watched, and it was Les Miles was still the coach then. And I think Danielle Hunter had three, like, passes batted at the line of scrimmage or, like, four that game, like a crazy amount. And one of the beat reporters was like, did you tell him to do something different like that game to get all those bad passes? And Les Miles went, he like visually, if you can think of this, he like raised his hands and he's like, well, we told him, you know, to get his hands and then just, you know, like put them up. And like really, and then like people started like laughing in the room, and then Les Miles started laughing. He's like, no, I didn't tell him to do anything different. We don't do that all the time.
So maybe just that's weird. Yeah, he had six passes defense that year, actually. I'm looking right now. He had 1.5 sacks his senior year.
He had four and a half in his
career. He had 13 tackles for loss, though. So usually your good chunk of your tackles for loss are sacks. That wasn't the case at all with him. So he made a ton of plays beyond the line of scrimmage. He didn't make a ton of plays in the passing game. Obviously, a lot that goes into that, the SEC being a pretty run heavy league, the way that LSU was using him as a ball read first or as a tackle read first kind of guy and not really letting him take off and attack. He's had to learn rush game. He ended up on the perfect team, but he's become really good. And you know, having him opposite Khalil Mack, I think is just, the Raiders just haven't had a second threat. The whole time Mack's been there, he's been the guy as a pass rusher, and having Hunter would change that. They're obviously still weak in other spots. You know, could have easily given him Todd Gurley here, but I think that I'll go with Danelle Hunter. Washington probably wouldn't change a thing, huh?
Well, they have a couple of different options I've been thinking about here.
You could. I just mean they probably like him.
I mean, Sheriff's been good, right? Yeah. Sheriff's been pretty dang good for them. And along with Sheriff, Ali Marpet is in this draft. And mm-hmm. Marpet didn't go until the second round because he was a smaller school guy. But, you know, in hindsight, Ali Marpet, I mean, if the Bucks didn't have to juggle him around at right guard and then center and now left guard, you know, he's one of the more solid interior offensive linemen in the league. So mm-hmm. You study Brandon Sheriff a lot more than I do. I see Ali Marpet. Is there a debate there for those two guys?
I think Scherf's definitely better. I like Marpet, but again, he has been juggled around a little bit. I think that's hurt him, not his fault. I think he's still really, really good. Like,
yeah,
you know, I put him as a guy that should definitely go in this redraft in the first round. I think Scherf's a little bit more, when you think about offensive linemen as creators, you know, as guys that literally create space, don't just cover guys up, but create space, move people at the point of attack. Plus, Scherf is asked to do a ton of versatile things. Washington's offense is very complicated in their run schemes, and so he'll pin and pull a lot of the time at the outside. You know, they'll get him out on counters, and you know, he can zone block. He can do any gap scheme type stuff, doubles, and work to the second level. And so there's just a lot that they ask him to do, and he's just very good at pretty much all of it, including pass protection.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rest of the roster too, and I see Alfred Morris is their starting running back, and I was like, oh, you know, they could probably upgrade Alfred Morris. But at this time, Alfred Morris is coming off, in his first three seasons in the NFL, was coming off three straight 1,000-yard seasons.
Yeah, he was and baller.
He was, dude, his first year, he started as a rookie, started all 16 games, right? Rushed him 335 times for 1,600 yards and 13 touchdowns.
Washington had Jay Gruden and Sean McVay, and their run scheme was fantastic. It still is fantastic. They haven't had a feature running back, but now they do. It's going to be lights out for the rest of the league.
There you go. Can't go a podcast without talking about Darius Geis. I am going to give him Sheriff. I think, actually, the player that I was arguing in my head wasn't actually Ali Marpet. It was actually Vic Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they play more of a 3-4, and I think that kind of suits Beasley a little bit better. But run game is important to the Redskins. It still is now. They needed Sheriff, and he's an important piece for them. So it was an A grade. It's away from I'll give him Sheriff here.
Yeah. Agreed. Figuring out a grade for Leonard Williams is a little bit tough. The team has been horrible.
Because the Jets suck.
Yeah, the team has been horrible. The talent around him was good when he got drafted, but it's declined, right? Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson both have gone downhill since Williams was here.
How dare you?
Well, it's reality.
No, it's true. No, it's true.
And Williams can be a very good player without being an elite, high-impact type of player. So he was my number one overall player in this draft. But I think if I look back, I would say, well, I was right in my evaluation of him. I was wrong in my valuation of him. Like, what he does well is...
Ooh, a little wordplay there.
You see what I did?
Wow.
What he does well is worthy of being taken in the first round, but he doesn't make the high-impact type plays to be in that top 10. You know what I mean? He's not going to get tons of sacks. He'll get a couple. He'll be a better interior pass rusher than most guys. But he doesn't get tons of behind the line of scrimmage production or penetration. With a better group around him, I'm sure that he would when he wasn't doubled as often. I mean, and the Jets also have the worst pass rush scheme in the NFL. So I'll say it's an A to a B type of pick, an A minus B plus probably type of pick for the Jets, because I think he's a very good player, but it's been a terrible situation for him. So I think that, you know, you could definitely say, okay, Leonard Williams makes sense for the Jets, and I don't think you frown upon the fact that they drafted him. But, and remember, you know, things have been really weird under Todd Bowles because this team hasn't really valued pass rush the way that they should. And they've relied heavily and were at this time planning to rely heavily on using Wilkerson and Richardson and Williams to run twists and things like that and get pressure without having great edge defenders. So, you know, they've just been sitting around with Quentin Copels and Calvin Pace and Trevor Riley and Jason Babin going into the year. And they were pretty much like, these are our guys, you know, we're okay with this crew. And that's kind of dangerous looking back in retrospect, you know? So, I mean, I'm tempted to go Vic Beasley here for sure. The running back situation was pretty brutal. Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell, both guys that are probably better served as backups. I mean, the Jets team hasn't been good for a while. At this point, people thought, you know, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, that the offensive line was still good. DeBrickshaw Ferguson, Nick Mangold were still there, so the offensive line was all right. You know, he could go a number of different directions, but I think you're right about Vic Beasley. I hesitate a little bit to have him this early because I do think he's been – I do worry about him some as a pass rusher. He hasn't really developed fully, you know, and I thought that would happen at this point. Explosive, athletic, bendy, but there's really no moves. There's no power. There's no counters. You know, all that stuff just doesn't come naturally to him, and that's a little bit frustrating at this point in his career. But I think you're right. He would be better served in an all pass rushing role, not dropping as much and not playing off the ball ever and just letting him kind of tee off and let that natural athleticism win from time to time. So, you know, it wasn't probably the best fit with him being with Todd Bowles, but given the fact that they needed edge pass rush as badly as they did and they should have focused more on it, I'll go Beasley to the Jets here at number six.
Beasley would have been my pick for the Chicago Bears.
They took Kevin White.
They took Kevin White, which is bad. Terrifying.
This is the weird thing. Sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're fine.
This White, you know, he's
you know,
played,
it's just my pick. It's fine. You can talk over it. It's not a big deal, you know.
He's played five games.
You got enough time to talk during your pick, but you got to come into my pick and start talking. It's fine.
I'm just afraid you're going to mess it up. I've got to save you from yourself.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing about Kevin White. He's played five games, and two of those games he got hurt in. So, I mean, it's one of those picks that's an F because he hasn't seen the
Kevin
field.
White?
No. I'm just saying that it's an F because he hasn't seen the field, but it's really hard to blame Kevin White. I mean, you suck because you got hurt. I don't know what to say. You know, I mean, I think he's been okay when he's played. He's just barely played. I mean, who has that happen in 3 years where they missed all but, you know, three full games? It's freaking crazy. He's been cursed. That's all I wanted to say. Good.
All right. Okay.
I just didn't want to make sure he was being unnecessarily slandered.
So when I look at Chicago's roster at the time, offense is, I don't know. You know more about the O-line than I do. They got Jermaine Bushrod, Matt Slauson, Roberto Garza, Kyle Long, and Jordan Mills. Charles Leno is their left tackle in waiting at this point, and Vlad Dukas, your favorite name to say, is their right guard in waiting right now.
Vlad Dukas was probably OG1 on that team. Just kidding. No, he's bad too. That is pretty bad. Pretty brutal on the offensive line.
Yeah. But Leno obviously would come in and play right tackle. I think Vic Beasley would have been the pick here for the Chicago Bears if he was here, because this is the year where they finished bottom half of the league in sacks, had just brought in Pernell McPhee, just brought in Jared Allen.
Did they have McPhee's a running back at this point?
Huh?
Who's their running back? Was it still Forte?
Matt Forte.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Forte, and then Jaquizz Rodgers, who was okay. And then they drafted Kadeem Carey, too, who, you know, before we found out, he just wasn't good. But I think that outside linebacker spot, because they're running a 3-4 at this time, would have been big for them, picking up a guy like Vic Beasley. But not here, obviously. Got picked right before it. So offensive line, then I think it's got to go. Because they have some young guys in the interior defensive line. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have made sense for them to go and prioritize it there. So I'm going to give him Ali Marpet.
Okay. Wow. Ali Marpet.
Yeah. So Ali Marpet on the interior with Kyle Long would be hella fun.
Right. And I think Marpet's a great pick for his own scheme, and the Bears ran a lot of zone scheme stuff. So I think he would, yeah, I like that.
Yep.
Falcons took Vic Beasley. He is gone. They still need edge pass rush. They need a lot of different things. There's a guy that they took named Grady Jarrett.
Give him Grady Jarrett like early.
Right, though? This is where Grady Jarrett should have gone.
This is the Aaron Donald thing, huh?
I mean, it is, but it's like magnified because this, what, he go in the fifth round?
something stupid.
I mean, I could give him Quan Alexander here too, and I could give him a linebacker. I mean, there's Kendricks and Alexander both still on the board, and you know, there's a couple different directions you could go, but I don't know. I just think, you know, what you need in this league is you need guys who are difference makers on the interior defensively and on the edge defensively. And if they didn't get one because Beasley's off the board, then I think Grady Jarrett makes a ton of sense. He's the best in terms of making an impact beyond the line of scrimmage. He's been the best interior defensive lineman in this class, and I think that those guys are really valuable. So he goes to Atlanta still, but about four rounds earlier than he originally than he ended up going in the actual draft. He comes off the board at number 8.
Number 9, New York Giants are up. They picked Eric Flowers.
Oh, by the way, I gave the Kevin White pick an F. I gave the Vic Beasley pick a B, fair. Mm-hmm. And I gave mm-hmm. it, what do you think about Eric Flowers?
He's a D.
D. Because he's been better. He was better last year. He's still been
bad. He was okay-ish last year.
But he's been bad mostly.
Well, I mean, like, and if people who are listening to this podcast are like, you're supposed to be judging a top 10 pick. He hasn't impacted since this year. That's really bad. Okay, you're right, I guess. But
sure, if you want to give him an F, we're not going to get mad.
Donovan Smith said something to – he was at the podium and when we were interviewing him a couple of weeks ago. And Donovan Smith, another guy who has had a lot of scrutiny, was picked as a starting left tackle by the Bucs in this draft, actually. And he struggled quite a bit with a lot of the things that just, you know, being consistent, showing up every play, knowing what to do here and there situationally, being in the right position, using his strength, being functional with what he does. He struggled a lot for the last 3 years. And Donovan Smith kind of came up to the podium. And granted, like, I understand it's all talk right now. It's OTAs. But he said, like, I have needed this time to acclimate to the NFL. And obviously it's him saying this, so he thinks it's the best of himself. But perhaps that's just the case. Perhaps these guys do just, you know, some guys just need more time than others. And that's mm-hmm. why, you know, we praise the guys that come out right away, their rookie sophomore years, and light it up. But, you know, Donovan Smith was one of the youngest people in the league coming into it. So, you know, Eric Flowers probably kind of the same way. He's just a younger guy adapting to a bigger game. And sometimes it just takes time for him. So I don't know. Eric Flowers might end up being okay this year. We'll see. Or if he's terrible, obviously you're cutting the cord. You're getting a new offensive lineman in there. So
And looking back, isn't Donovan Smith or Lael Collins the best tackle in this class?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I mean, it's Scherf is, I mean, I'm sorry, Pete has moved to guard. Humphreys has been either hurt or not delivering on his promise. Flowers has been bad. Clemmings was bad. Ogbuey was horrendous for Cincinnati this past season. Jake Fisher has been very average at best. I mean, that's Donovan Smith was the next tackle off the board after all. I mean, after some of those guys. And, you know, I mean, he, you know, before Clemmings, obviously, but, I mean, he hasn't been perfect, but he's probably been the tackle class has been bad.
Right, exactly. So it was a weird tackle class. Obviously, Eric Flowers has not proved to be worth that pick, but that's just why he's a D instead of an F. Anyways, right now, their starting depth chart, their starting running back is Rashad Jennings.
Oh, my.
I'm giving him David Johnson. And
oh, my.
I think that changes things around a lot for New York. And it also means they wouldn't have to take Saquon Barkley this year.
Love it.
But I think David Johnson is kind of perfect for that. Obviously, you're getting more of an explosive offense, picking Odell the year before. I guess technically in our redraft, who did they take?
They took, good question,
DeMarcus Lawrence. All right.
Yeah, that's right.
So they don't have Odell, but anyways, I think David Johnson's kind of perfect for him. David Johnson's obviously proven to be one of those dynamic offensive weapons in the NFL, both in the passing game and in the running game. And so, you know, you get him at a spot like this, you know, number 9 for the New York Giants, when right now you look at their depth chart and they're trying to platoon a bunch of dudes to do what one David Johnson does, and they wouldn't even do it as well with, you know, 5 guys. So much better to simplify, get it in one package if you can, if you know it's all going to be there. And so I think that's kind of the move that they would go.
Yeah. The Rams are on the clock. They took Todd Gurley. That was an A. He was offensive rookie of the year. The whole team had a down year. Then he came back and was the best. He looked like the best running back in the NFL last year. I'm just going to give him Gurley. I'm not going to try and get cute. They had Trey Mason as their running back. I think he didn't make this team or didn't make the roster the next year. They didn't have anything at running back. They needed one because Nick Foles was their quarterback at this time. You know, Case Keenum was on this roster. Wide receiver situation was brutal. But to me, Gurley is a great receiver, a great running back, a great pass protector. He's just a great all-around player. They needed an offensive player like that on this team. Home run pick. I know it's a running back, and you can argue about whether a running back should go here, but in retrospect, the tackle class was horrendous, and the interior offensive line class has already seen the best two guys go off the board, so same for the defensive line and edge class. So given who's on the board, thumbs up for this pick for the Rams. And, you know, in retrospect, Donald, even though they missed on Greg Robinson, Donald and Gurley in back-to-back years really set this franchise up to be, you know, what it currently is now. So, you know, hats off to the way they've drafted since that time. So tomorrow we've got the next 10, or I guess 11 picks. Trey Waynes to the Vikings will be the first one we take a look at. But until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.